This is Weekends with Jason Olbourn on today's News Talk, TNT.
And welcome back to Weekends. I hope you're enjoying the discussion conversation today as we explore all facets of life around the world. Doesn't matter if we're facing war, wokeism, or our wallet, we've got you covered on TNT. The recent Senate inquiry into banking in Australia was attended by Robbie Barwick of the Citizens Party for all 13 hearings. I thought it would be a wonderful, worthwhile discussion to be able to explore what exactly goes on behind closed doors and whether or not the Australian people have got a chance against a government seemingly intent to take away our rights and freedoms as much as they want. For our safety and convenience, of course, it's always for that, isn't it? And we wholesale just give away said freedoms and privacy, which is a big one. And of course, we had that recent day here in Australia where people were going out and withdrawing cash from the ATM as some sort of protest, or at least to try and create some momentum in that space. My question for you, though, is if you opened up your pocket or your wallet right now, is there any folding stuff inside? Meaning maybe you need to go back to the ATM and replenish, even if it is a 20, a 50, or a little bit more, something to go and pay the next person that you are going to purchase something from, and just remind yourself that you use it or you lose it. And that's just the way that this is a strange world at the moment. And if everyone starts using cash again, government's going to be really, really struggling to take it away from us, even if they want to impose charges on cash, if you can believe that. Well, let's bring our guest in right now. His name is Robbie Barwick. He's a long-time executive member of the Australian Citizens Party. He's the party's media spokesman, national research director, writer, and editor of the party's publication, Australian Alert Service, and presenter of the party's weekly show, The Citizens Report. Robbie Barwick, welcome to Weekends.
Thanks, Jason. Good to be here.
Terrific to have you on the Weekend show, and it gives us a chance to sort of dig deep in a number of different areas. And I'm as perplexed as the next person to think that despite the fact that we've been told we're heading towards a cashless society, which 30 years ago may have seemed innocent, today it seems like anything but. Digital ID, central bank digital currency at the helm, the fact that your money can be programmable. And then when you bring in the idea of the big carrot called a universal basic income, or a bribe for certain people to sign up and to get this momentum going, one wonders, what are we really up against here? And I wanted to juxtapose all of that against the banking Senate inquiry that you attended all of its hearings. How are you looking at this digital financial crisis that Australians don't even know is coming, and why did you get so involved with it?
Well, I'm looking at it as something that I don't think is inevitable, but the people need to be alert, and I think the people are increasingly alert. For us, the question of cash first came up in 2019 when the Morrison government put up a bill to ban cash transactions over $10,000. And we allied with people like Martin North of Digital Finance Analytics, John Adams, who's an independent economist, and we started to coordinate a campaign against this bill. And we put up some important objections to the bill because, first of all, we knew that it was a slippery slope to going cashless. I'm going to start with $10,000, right? Once you actually ban the use of cash, then the European jurisdictions that have done this, they've taken as low as $500 in some places, or 500 euros, right? So it was definitely a slippery slope. But we also knew that their excuse, their reason, their justification was bogus, because they were saying this was about the black economy, the shadow economy, and the government needed to crack down on the shadow economy. What we knew was this was about bank power. You were giving the banks enormous power over our lives and specifically to make sure that we can't escape bad policies. And those include things like, at the time, it's a bit different now, but at the time, the way interest rates were, we were heading towards potentially negative interest rates. And if you take away cash, you can trap people inside banks and they can't escape those kinds of interest rates. The other one that we were warning about is bail-in. I don't know if you're familiar with bail-in, right? But bail-in is this policy where you can prop up failing banks by taking away their customers' deposits. Problem with that policy, it people get wind of it. They want to get their money out of there, and you do that by withdrawing cash. So we pointed out that this was about entrapping people. So we defeated that, though, Jason, and we defeated it. It was enormous backlash. I can't, like, the scale of the opposition that just mushroomed against that was enormous. And the government and the opposition and the Greens and they couldn't drop it quick enough, really. So by 2020, they dropped that bill. Senator Malcolm Roberts moved a motion in the Senate to dump the bill, and they dumped the bill. So we knew that the government had got a message. They would be very reluctant to come up with anything that would take away cash. But we said then, I mean, I can remember being on a show in 2020 saying, look, people, the government's got the message, but now the banks are the issue. And it's going to come down to use it or lose it, right? And in fact, Jason, in 2020, the Reserve Bank did a paper on a central bank digital currency, evaluating what it would mean. It was just very, very preliminary. But they said in that paper that if they went down that path, they would not support both a central bank digital currency and a physical currency, right? It'd be one or the other. And at that time, it was definitely a case of, oh, okay, people, well, you know, first of all, we didn't think it was the Reserve Bank's right to have that, to make that call. But we definitely thought, okay, this is going to be a case of use it or lose it. We've got to show these guys that you've got to use this, use the cash and send the message. And so that's what got us thinking about this. And one of the things we noticed is that the banks in COVID took every opportunity they could to take away cash. They gloated at the drop in the use of cash. And so they seized on that. But the other thing they were doing is branch closures. And this was really key. There's a really good book by a South African guy, actually, who's based in Europe, named Brett Scott, called Cloud Money, about this cashless agenda. And he actually describes how there's only two off-ramps to the banking system, branches and ATMs. Otherwise, all your money, if your money is sitting in an account and not in cash in your wallet, that is digital money. Mm. Right? It's either digital or it's physical. And if it's digital money, it's actually bank money. It's not currency. It's not state money. It's bank money. The only way to get your money out of a bank is through a branch or through an ATM. And so we saw, hang on, the banks are pushing their cashless agenda by taking away the way for people to access cash, right? And then taking away at this rapid pace. And that's why we worked very, very hard to get the Senate inquiry up. And I think the Senate inquiry has proven everything we were concerned about.
It's an extraordinary revelation there when you consider, when you start to dismantle the pieces of the puzzle, just how sneaky this whole process is. Tell me, the Senate inquiry was some 13 or so hearings, and you attended all of them. How was it structured, and what was the approach? Were you confident that it would play out the way that it did, perhaps?
Well, I think it's been better than we expected. This is an amazing inquiry. And now don't get your hopes up. There's a difference between the inquiry, the process itself, and then what seals the deal at the end, because all sorts of backroom pressures are brought to bear. But we have taken away through this inquiry any excuse they have. It's just the question is, are the politicians on the inquiry going to be up to it? The way it's structured is the Senate, I'll give a plug for politics at the moment, if I could. People get cynical about politics, and there's a lot to be cynical about. The worst problem in politics is a lack of transparency. And that can be very frustrating, right? And I'm wearing every opportunity I get, I wear my Julian Assange shirt.
Yep.
Mr. Transparency rotting in jail for bringing transparency, right? The system does not want transparency. But the best part, I've been involved in a lot of inquiries since 2017. The very best part of Parliament is the Senate inquiry process, because it can be unpredictable. And I think probably regular listeners and viewers of this channel would actually have a certain familiarity with the Senate process, and especially things this thing called Senate estimates, because there's senators that you're probably familiar with, like Malcolm Roberts, Jared Rennick, and I actually count the Greens among some of these, and especially when it comes to banking, people like when Senator Nick, when the I have a personal view, when the Greens are talking about non-green issues, they're pretty good. And Senator Nick McKim gets in there on goes after the Reserve Bank and on banking issues and is very good. And so those senators, especially Senator Rennick, was keen to support an inquiry into bank branch closures. Now, can I say that was a particularly sensitive issue at the time in terms of party relationships, because in 2021, in the second half of 2021, the National Party had put up a thing called the Regional Banking Task Force. Now, so this was 6 months out from the election. They'd been in government for 9 years. And so what they were doing was purely a political stunt, was looking like they were addressing this issue of bank branch closures in regional areas just for the purpose of the election. So they set up a task force. They included the banks on the task force. And then the task force was completed before the election, but the report wasn't. And this shows you how dirty politics can be. The Labor government won, right? Albanese won. This was a National Party stunt. The Finance Sector Union, which is part of the Labor Party, like one of the support unions for the Labor Party, had denounced it as a Labor Party stunt, as a National Party stunt, sorry. The Labor Party should have just scrapped the whole thing and put up their own agenda. Instead, they continued this and finished off the report. And the only explanation for that is because the banks were running the damn task force. And the banks and both parties, both sides serve the banks equally, mate. It's bipartisan corruption in my view. And so the Labor government released the report in September 2022. And as soon as they did, I kid you not, this was a report that was all about addressing the problem of branch closures. As soon as they did, the banks took it as a green light to accelerate their branch closures. And so when Jared Rennick actually paid attention to this, when Senator Rennick paid attention to this, he had to propose an inquiry that would embarrass his own National Party colleagues because they had had their name on this task force, right? And now politicians are nothing if not shameless. And so I know behind the scenes they were embarrassed, but publicly Senator Rennick was persuasive. We also, our party and the people we were getting to support, bombarded him with calls saying you've got to have a proper inquiry in this, not a task force. It's got to be a proper Senate inquiry. And so they moved it in February 2023 and they got it up. And it was set up as a proper references committee. And a references committee is one where the good news about that is the chair of a references committee is not a member of the government. There's legislation committees and references committees. The legislation committee is always chaired by a member of the government. Reference committee is not. So Matt Canavan became the chair. It went to the Rural and Regional Affairs and Transport Committee. To be honest, I wish it had been bigger than a regional banking inquiry because it was focusing on branch closures in regional Australia. This is a problem in all of Australia, including metropolitan areas. But the particular committee was the best one because they had the best people on it, like people like Senator Rennick and Senator Canavan. And even the Labor people who participated were very good. So they were initially supposed to report by December 2023, but this thing just took on a life of its own. It actually snowballed. And you get to know the senators when you participate in this thing. I'm attending every hearing. I'd flown to, there was the first one was in Sale, the second one was in Cloncurry in Queensland, and then in Ingham. And they start to see me at every hearing. And so you get on a first name basis with them. And pretty early on, Senator Canavan actually said, and he's quite an experienced parliamentarian, he actually said, this is the best inquiry, the most successful inquiry he's ever been part of, because the banks were showing that they were getting nervous. And, you know, that was really, really exceptional the way it started to develop that way. And it started to prove our point, which I can go through in the details of the findings of that.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. What we'll do is we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and get into the details of this inquiry. Isn't it encouraging when a senator comes up and acknowledges the success of a particular inquiry where our own guest was involved with the creation of it? Now, don't miss out on a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily watch or listen live to us anywhere, anytime. It's available right now to download, keeping you up to speed on today's News Talk TNT.
TNT's Alex Zaharoff-Royd.
One of the things that AI lets you accomplish in your business and personal life in a faster and more efficient way on your desktop than you could before when you only had to do it through the cloud.
I think about what we do on a day-to-day basis, right? So as a salesperson, I'm creating emails to send out to customers to talk to them about how we'd love to do business with them, how we'd like to engage. And so one of the things that I've started to use is using AI to formulate, you know, emails and help start, instead of starting with a blank page. For me personally, I struggle with a blank page. I like to have something to build around. And so, you know, using a large language model has helped me be more efficient in my work life and create content and create things more quickly that I can then get out to market and work with my customers.
Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Royd on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. CO2 sustains all life on Earth, but now it's in long-term decline. We face the return of an ice age. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back to Weekends. My guest this hour from the Australian Citizens Party, Robbie Barwick. And we are in the midst of discovering what was achieved, Robbie, through the Senate inquiry that Matt Canavan openly admitted that this was the best committee he'd been involved with. Jeez, that must have made you feel like you were really involved with something that can make a genuine difference. But of course, you've got your work cut out for you.
No, it was definitely music to my ears. Here's what it achieved. And the important thing about what I'm about to say is I know the senators on the committee know this. What it achieved is it proved the banks are liars. That's what it proved. Because what the banks have been saying, led by Anna Bligh, the CEO of the Banking Association, is that they are following their customers down the digital path. And what the inquiry proved is they're forcing it. And they're forcing it by taking away the alternatives to digital. But in their arrogance, Jason, it's going to be their undoing, because they're forcing digital. Just say we're all happy with digital. And one day in the future, I can imagine, through greater degrees of comfort, familiarity, the better technology, you know, et cetera, you know, people may look back, you know, in a century, people may look back on us as dinosaurs, but I don't care, because this is the here and now. And even if everything was great, Australia geographically is not ready to force 100% digital on this economy. It's just not. Mm. You go out of the major cities and our infrastructure is not up to it. Power failures and internet connectivity failures are rife. And the pinstriped bankers in Pitt Street and Collins Street who are pushing this for their short-term bonuses, by the way. This is like the people who actually make the decisions in the banks. They're not there forever, right? The management team is there for a certain period of time. They want to maximize their bonuses. And man, you know, look at I don't know if you saw this, but in the last, it's only a relative handful of years, the amount of money that Australian banks are making from charges on card transactions and digital transactions has gone from a few hundred million to $4 billion a year. This is rivers of gold for doing nothing. Mm-hmm. Those bankers, they're pocketing those bonuses, thank you very much, right? Do they care about what happens in a country town when they've taken away all the options? So I just use digital. Well, no, sorry, it's always falling out. One in the town of Junee in New South Wales, the guy who ran the chocolate factory there, he said the the Optus outage, I think it was, or one of the outages in Sydney, in Australia last year, probably around Sydney, he said, what brought Sydney to a halt that day happens three times a week in this town, right? And see, this is going to be their undoing, because even if there was none of these other concerns, and the other concerns are much bigger, really, they're trying to foist this technology on a place that's not ready. And so the senators didn't have to go far out of the cities to get that feedback immediately. So they saw that the banks are forcing the digital thing not following. They saw that if they thought that the excuse for closing branches was that they're unprofitable, they were quickly disabused of that notion. There would be less than 1% of the branches that the banks have closed are actually unprofitable. They're closing profitable branches, because they admitted in the very first hearing, profitability is not a factor. That it's got nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. They can rig the numbers any way they like to make them seem profitable. One of the ones that got people like Matt Canavan going is the banks actually claim carbon credits for closing branches, because that reduces their energy consumption. But of course, what is it, if you're especially in country areas, what does it do to their customers' carbon consumption, carbon emissions? They then have to get in their four-wheel drives usually and drive hundreds of kilometers to the next town, right? And that's an unimportant metric for me, but it shows you what these banks just don't care about anything. They're increasing their productivity at the expense of the community's productivity. The number one thing I think the senators will learn from this is these were 13 hearings, most of them in regional towns, except for the ones in Canberra. The feedback was universal. So the local flavor, but universal feedback. We need cash. We can't function without it. The banks are lying to us. The banks are disrupting our economies here. The banks are making us one. At the very last hearing in Bribie Island, the mayor of the town of Mitchell said, we are being set up to fail. Yet Anna Bligh had been going around Australia saying, this is what Australians, this is what our customers want. We're just giving them what they want. So the senators know that. And given that we're here talking, the purpose of this interview is talk about cash. Given that we'd identified the number one method by which the banks were forcing us cashless was through taking away branches and closing and shutting ATMs. What we've shown is that their whole strategy has been based on a lie. So we've totally exposed the truth about their strategy, and now it's going to come down to, is the government, who we'd given, you know, they got the government people got the message from the Australian public in 2019, is the government going to rise to the occasion here and realize and say, okay, no, there are times when the government has to take charge, right? We're a society, they're our elected leaders, and they've got to step in and say to the banks, no, you are not going to take away the ability of people to transact in cash. It's your responsibility. You're going to have to do it. And our party has come up, one of the reasons we were involved in this, we came up with a solution. We want to bring back a public bank, right? We had one for 86 years with the Commonwealth Bank. And ever since that was privatized, the banks have not had any, the big four banks have not had any real competition. And a public bank, we want it to operate through post offices. You could have a situation where because the Reserve Bank's government owned, and you have a post office public bank that's government owned, the Reserve Bank, which is responsible for the provision of cash to the banking system, the Reserve Bank will know through 4,000 postal outlets around Australia exactly how much cash Australians need, use the infrastructure of Australia Post to get it there, and there's no excuse, none of this armor guard, hand-wringing, et cetera, there's no excuse anymore to say, oh, no, it's too expensive and all that kind of stuff. No, you can have a very efficient system to make sure that Australians have cash and we can just take away the whole BS part of these arguments, right? So that's what we're hoping. But that's one solution. But whether they come up with that or not, they're going to have to do something.
Tell me, was the public post office bank solution presented at any of these particular hearings?
Yes, by yours truly on the 1st of December. So what I was able to, what the beauty of what we're proposing is we have a precedent that we know it works. So this inquiry I mean, the main theme of this inquiry ended up being cash, but it was about branch closures, right? Branch closures, you know, the public complained about not having access to cash because of branch closures. Well, how do you stop branch closures? Well, I was able to go to this inquiry and say, we know a public postal bank will stop Australia's big four banks from closing branches because it's happened before, just not in Australia. It happened in New Zealand. In the 15 years before 2002, the Kiwis banks had closed 1,300 branches, and their big four are owned by our big four. So they are our big four. And the New Zealand government, the Helen Clark government, and it wasn't, they didn't really volunteer to do it. They had to govern in coalition with a smaller party called the Alliance. And that smaller party had one policy platform. They wanted a bank. And the post office stepped in and said, hey, we could do it as a postal bank. And so they set up Kiwi Bank in 2002. For the next 7 years, there were no branch closures in New Zealand, not one. And I actually spoke to a director of the ANZ Bank who was a director at the time. He's retired now, but he had been a director at the time. He said they had watched what Kiwi Bank did, and they were shocked at the flood of deposits that went into that bank because the public, given a chance to find an alternative to the big four, they chose it. And the banks got the message and they backed away straight away. So I was able to present that, and it's a pretty powerful argument. But see, everyone we talk to is enthusiastic about our idea. Politician, this is a paradox of politics, if you think about it. Politicians like to be popular, don't they?
Mm.
Why don't they seize on this kind of policy that would make them very popular? Because the bank lobby is very, very powerful, right? And that is going to be, they would be machinations behind the scenes right now. And so let me say what you mentioned about what you said earlier. That's why Cash Out Tuesday last month was so important. This started this month, wasn't it? I think 2nd of April. It was so important because that was enormously successful. You know, social media had a campaign to get everyone to withdraw cash. A lot of people did it. A lot of politicians did it and posted videos of themselves doing it, photos of themselves doing it, right? If you're in a bank board meeting since Cash Out Tuesday, there would have been a discussion in that board meeting about what that means for them. They went from, I remember in middle of 2020, the banks boasted, after the first the national lockdown, they boasted that they had achieved in 10 weeks cashless goals. So they admitted they had goals, cashless goals they thought would take 5 years. So they admitted then, Channel 7 did a story on it. They admitted then they have an agenda to get rid of cash. They now have seen through Cash Out Tuesday and through the Reserve Bank's latest figures show that the ATM withdrawals in February before Cash Out Tuesday had already gone up 10% on the previous February, right? They're getting the strong message from the public, thanks to this kind of exposure that we're giving it now, and people have been listening, that they're not having it all their own way anymore. And so now they're going to come up with other strategies. We need to worry about what the senators are going to come up with, what the government's going to come up with, because if they step in, then it's game over. They can make sure the banks do the right thing. We've got to make them do that.
Now, how do you propose that we actually get into the ears of these senators and make sure that they do the right thing based on the actual evidence that you're able to present and uncover?
Well, so it's really important to follow these processes, right? And that's why I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. And so when the report is handed down on the 16th of May, we're going to read it very closely to see what's in it. And here's the thing. If that report, Jason, does not match the quality of the hearings because the backroom pressures have been brought to bear to weaken it, and trust me, I know that happens in politics. I know of parliamentary inquiries that had a final report that because the chair of the inquiry was an independent thinker, his own party took the report away from him, rewrote it before they issued it, even though they hadn't been part of the inquiry. A total corruption of the process, right? I mean, this sort of stuff can go on. The banks are the most powerful lobby. So what I'm saying is pay attention to what the Citizens Party says about the final report, because if we don't clap it in, right, And if we say, hey, this is not up to par, then what people need to do is express that to their politicians. We have launched, coming towards the end of this inquiry process, we have launched a marginal seats campaign where we've identified, and people can see some, and we'll keep putting this out, people can see that if they want to follow us on our website at citizensparty.org.au, they'll see the updates on this. We've identified the marginal seats in Australia, and we have to use the processes of democracy such as they are, right, to make the politicians afraid of the many, the people, not the few, right, the banks. And the best ways to get the message to the top of the parties is through the marginal seats, because, you know, both major parties at the last election had their lowest ever primary votes on record, right? The crossbenches in both chambers are getting bigger and bigger. That's a good thing in my view, but these parties are going at, if it wasn't for preferential voting, they'd have disappeared by now almost. So what they do is they pay attention to the marginal seats. They desperately need to win those marginal seats. When a couple of months ago, Bankwest out of the blue announced that it was going to close all, essentially close all 60 branches in WA, 45 of them totally closed, and 15 were going to be rebadged as Commonwealth Bank branches. And this is so shocking. And right in the middle of the inquiry, and it led to a very fiery hearing in Tom Price up in the Pilbara that I went up for. We put out the word, look, call the marginal seats. Now, the most marginal seat in WA is the seat of Tangney, and the Member of Parliament is Labor. And he's that, you might have heard about him, he's that former policeman, former dolphin trainer. His name's Sam Lim, right? He's a Australian Chinese. His name's Sam Lim. And so he's a former WA cop and a former dolphin trainer. Within 2 weeks of us telling the public to start calling the marginal seats, he got up in Parliament and gave a two-minute speech about branch closures and how they're destroying the community. And he said, I'm getting lots of calls about this, right? So the people who run the Labor Party, especially the campaign side, they're saying to these marginal seat politicians, what are you hearing? What are you hearing? What do we need to know? What can we do? What can we do to differentiate ourselves from the other side? Well, so we're going to be saying to them for the rest of the year, demand action. And we're telling people, because this is our solution, demand action for, say, we need a postal bank. Bob Catter has been talking for a long time about putting up a bill for a postal bank. I know that One Nation supports a postal bank. I know the Greens actually support a postal bank. If there was a postal bank bill in the Senate, the Greens would vote for it. I know that. A lot of it comes down to Labor Party. I mean, what do they want to get re-elected or not? Albanese is on track to suffer the infamy of either being a one-term prime minister or falling into minority government, right? Like Julia Gillard did. Now, I hope he falls into minority government, because if the crossbench has more leverage, that's great, right? And people will use it. So we're going to be showing people how to do that, and follow us for the rest of the year leading up to the next election on how you can get the message through to those marginal seats.
Perfect. Now, before we take the break, Rob, just give us the website again for people who want to follow.
www.citizensparty.org.au.
Beautiful. Well, we will take that break and come back with more. You're watching and listening to Weekends here on TNT.
My baby's back from the West Coast.
Hear those pictures that you asked for your school project? First day of school, cute as a button.
So long ago.
Oh, here's Grandma Florence after that flood wiped out the whole neighborhood.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe. And is the best way to protect that legacy.
Ah, those beans smell heavenly.
Give Mom a little credit.
You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year.
Oh, great idea.
At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local I can send you with Elaine.
Okay.
Smart.
I'm coming to share with you guys.
Protect your legacy. Plan for natural disasters today.
Visit ready.gov/plan.
Are you ready to help your family get prepared for the unexpected?
Here we go!
Ladybug and Cat Noir know how important it is to be ready, because you never know when Hawk Moth is going to strike or a disaster will hit. And you don't need miraculous powers. Just put those planning skills you already have to good use. Make a plan that will help you and your family be ready when emergencies happen. Ready Kids can help. Get started at ready.gov/kids.
This is Weekends with Jason Olborne on today's News Talk, TNT.
And welcome back. This is the final segment of the Saturday edition of Weekends, and you're with me and my guest, Robbie Barwick from the Australian Citizens Party. My word, we are getting an introduction into how politics used to be played and should be played as part of the Citizens Party. Robbie, this is a big deal because at long last, we're finally seeing that politicians, when taken to task, actually have to do their jobs, which is represent the interests of the people and not the interests of the lobby. That, and of course, as you mentioned, the banking lobby, the biggest and most powerful in the country. And it's an interesting perspective here. And I want to get into a bit more about what people have been saying about the use of cash in a moment. But I think it's a good time to just explain to people that they shouldn't be demoralized in this scenario. On the contrary, the power goes to those that make the effort, and every step counts, doesn't it?
It does. Look, one of the worst events in British history was called the Peterloo Massacre in 1817, I think it was. And the poet Percy Shelley wrote a very angry poem called The Mask of Anarchy. And it's really long. And he slanders all these top government officials who are responsible for this massacre. But he ends with the immortal lines: "Rise like lions from your slumber in unvanquishable number. Shake your chains to earth like dew, which in sleep had fallen on you. Ye are many, they are few." And that's always been the truth of politics. There's the people and there's the elite, and the people have always had the power. So what the elite have to do is convince them to not use their power, and through all sorts of distractions, etc. So here's an issue, cash, which more and more people are starting to focus on it and understand the power of that. Don't be demoralized and have this. If you have the attitude, oh, well, look, they're all corrupt, nothing you can do about it, and act accordingly, then you won't do anything about it, right? Mm. But what we've been able to identify, and we really started having, we've always thought this way, but we really started having a lot of success from 2017 onwards in enforcing. We'd get people, look, make calls to politicians on this issue, and we'd identify the politicians to target, et cetera. And next thing you know, you got politicians dancing around trying to address the issue because they're getting calls, they're getting people visit them, et cetera, on this issue, and it's actually working. So we think on the cash question, it's a real sensitive area, and it's going to come down to something where, in this particular case, you're not just asking the politicians to act, you're asking the politicians to take on a lobby that they're used to bowing to, mm-hmm. right? So they have to be more afraid of you than they are of them. And we're coming into election, and it's perfect timing, because at election time, they are more afraid of the voters than they are of the, because at banks, the Commonwealth Bank doesn't have a vote. Matt Comyn has one vote. Matt Comyn's got 15 million customers, right? Mm-hmm. One vote versus 15 million votes and things like that. So you got to understand the power of that, and the increasing numbers of people getting to focus on this cash issue, I think, has a lot of power. And if that's why I'm saying, if you follow the kind of instructions we put out, you'll see ways that you can influence the process.
Oh, it's wonderful. There's nothing quite like being active in the political process, and not necessarily putting the badge of activist onto it. It's just simple citizens. Just having their say, and it's great that you've been able to explain that. I want to circle back again to cash, and it was the governor of the Reserve Bank that came out with the novel idea of charging to use cash. And it was only this week that I saw that Scott Pape, the Barefoot Investor author, came out and made an argument that we should be paying for the use of cash, and he described the idea of staff being forced to lug heavy bags of coins to the bank. And I'm thinking, hang on, what happened to the cost of doing business? Does that mean that if each transaction, you've got to make a $1 contribution to the store's rent, or you've got to make a 10-cent contribution to the owner's, you know, fuel card? I mean, it's the most preposterous idea. What's your take on this argument that you've got to pay to use cash?
Well, it's in my view, I'm pretty convinced it's entirely a reaction to the success of our campaign. Mm. The fact that people now at the second last hearing, which was a short one in Canberra, Senator Rennick was questioning and Senator Roberts were questioning the Reserve Bank about this question of cash. And there was all this crisis. I don't know if you followed it. There's this all crisis stuff about Armaguard and, you know, there's now a monopoly, et cetera. But that wasn't what was interesting. What was interesting was the Reserve Bank official actually said, he said, look, cash use as a percentage of transactions plunged to 13% in our last survey, and that's an all-time low. But then he acknowledged, but we have other ways, because they do the survey every 3 years, he said, we have other ways of notice of measuring it, and it's actually started to tick up. So that's what he said. And then we had cash out Tuesday. But then after that, the Reserve Bank figures I mentioned before came out for February's ATM withdrawals to show a 10%, not a 1%, like, well, 9.5% increase in cash withdrawals in February 2024 over February 2023. That's a definite uptick, right? People are using that. And so these banks had a cashless agenda. They did. They're lying that they didn't. Anna Bligh's now going around in damage control saying, oh, no. No one in the bank wants to get rid of cash. Matt Common testified in September. No. We don't. This is what he said in September. No. We fully support cash. But do you know it costs us $400 million a year to transport it around the place? And my reaction to that is boo, hoo, hoo. Your business is money.
That's right.
What you said, the cost of doing business. Now, so there's a think about it this way, Jason. There's the cost of doing business for a bank. Their business is nothing but money. Who cares if it's $400 million? That's on the expense side of the ledger. After they took that out, they still made $10 billion, right? What a joke. That is their business money. So cry me a river. As for the private businesses, well, yeah, their business may be being a baker, a butcher, a candlestick maker, or whatever, for money. Right. Yes. So the money is the point of their business. And I am sympathetic with the fact that because of the banks, they're taking away the ability for those businesses to bank it easily. Right. So instead of usually a shopping strip would have a bank in the strip. Mm. So it's not when you say lugging, you know, bags of cash, yeah, two doors down. Now, I know it's frustrating if you go into the next suburb, but that's the bank's fault. That's not the customer's fault. So I'm convinced because of the success of this, that the banks are thinking, well, how do we put our thumb on the scale? How do we tilt it in our favor? And the Reserve Bank, the fact that she raised it first, shows you how much the Reserve Bank do the bidding of the private banks. And they've identified, of all the attractions for using cash, probably the number one attraction is the lack of charges, right? And there's a great meme, I think everyone will be familiar with it now, that if you know, it doesn't matter how many times a $50 note changes hands, it's still a $50 note. But a $50 transaction that starts off digital becomes $49, becomes $48, becomes $47, et cetera, right? Cash retains its value because there's no charges. And the charges themselves are rivers of gold for the banks. $4 billion a year now is flowing into the banks. So they're very unhappy with this, and they've thought, well, let's put our thumb on the scale. Now, I don't want to speak ill of Scott Pape. All I can say is I think he must be ignorant if he's just buying into the banks' propaganda to assume that this is a sincere problem. It's not. It's a fake problem. And what people have to do on this, Jason, is actually express their outrage early, all right? Make it clear, no, we will not tolerate. To her credit, Michelle Bullock, when she raised this in December, she said, I don't think this will go down very well. I doubt if it'll happen. Well, make sure that's true, that it doesn't go down very well.
It's an interesting admission, isn't it? It's quite incredible. It's not dissimilar. I don't know if you saw this one today, Robbie, but Stephen Miles, the what I call the exit premier of Queensland, right, given that he's been the one selected to lose, actually came out 6 months ahead of the election and says, "Yeah, we're going to lose the election." That just blew my mind. What are we witnessing in Australian politics today? That who would ever admit that you're in for just a year? You know you're in trouble, but you'd always say that you're fighting. So this admission from Michelle Bullock, this admission from Stephen Miles, these politicians know that it is not a one-way street anymore, and it's the work that that you're doing and many others are doing for different issues that is making all the difference. And so those watching, those listening should feel not just reassured but energized that there is a process and a way out. And goodness me, when you roll up your own sleeves and make that contribution, Robbie, it certainly changes everything, doesn't it? Because that is instant empowerment. How on a personal scale, even from a party level, how's the party feeling now with the success of the work that you've achieved through this work you're doing in the banking sector?
Oh, it's been fantastic because our party is not a new party. We've been around for more than 35 years. And, you know, in that time, we've done some hard yards and we've spent years in the wilderness. You know, we had decades where you'd never see us in the media, for instance, even though we were at a grassroots level doing successful stuff. But I became, you know, quite expert on the banking issue in that through a lot of research on the research director, and I've spent thousands of hours in the most important libraries in Australia, going back through the original documentation. So when I talk about a national bank and the way the old Commonwealth Bank worked, you know, I know what I'm talking about, and that became very valuable. But what happened was the world really started to change post global financial crisis. The opportunity was there because that's when the public started to see that the high priests of finance were fallible. See, when you have the banking system can be really mysterious to people and operate like a priesthood of old, and the priesthood's power is based on their mystery and they have this secret knowledge and who are we to question them? Well, they nearly blew up the world in 2008, and in some parts they did, and they did here too. Except our government moved really early to prop them up. And so they got away with lying that these banks were sound. But the problems can't be put under the carpet. And so the things they did to keep the banks up, like throwing all this money at them, has resulted now in inflation and has resulted in we've got these ridiculous unaffordable house prices and all those sort of things. And it all goes back to the banking system. And so what the people now don't have is any trust in these institutions that they just never used to think second guess before. Now they second guess them all the time. And so that was the raw material to work with. And then it's like, okay, here's where we can identify, here's where the weak points are, here's where you can affect government policy. And in doing that, suddenly we're getting results. And I think since 2017, we've been involved in something like directly responsible for getting the parliament to set up something like 7 or 8, I can't quite remember now, parliamentary inquiries. And some of them were really big. Before this one, we were the party that got the inquiry into Christine Holgate being sacked from Australia Post. No one wanted to question that. We questioned it because we found out she wanted to set up a postal bank. And we thought, well, that would make her an enemy of the banks. And Scott Morrison was the biggest banker's stooge in the history of Australia. And that made perfect sense what he did to her, right? And so we got an inquiry into that and laid a lot of things bare. And now this one is probably even bigger and more successful than that, and we'll see. But it's not just me being persuasive. It's because when I go into Parliament, all the politicians are aware that there's potentially thousands of people behind me who are prepared to make phone calls, send emails, go and meet politicians on these same issues, and they get, hang on, the Citizens Party can muster numbers here, and it gets their attention.
Oh, it's extraordinary. Now, I don't know if you saw this one floating around social media this week, but somebody shared that they used their Bitcoin to pay for a meal that was $100 was the fee in usual currency. To transfer $100 from their Bitcoin wallet or however that works their transfer fee was $144 on top. How is that a financial system that can even work? You got a thought on that?
Yeah, look. So I'm happy for the Bitcoin bros, I think they call themselves, to do their best. And that is not fair for them, right? But I don't know what justified that fee, right? But anyway, someone came up with it.
This was to do with blockchain maintenance. This was the justification. But right. how can the recording of a transaction cost 144% of the original transaction, and it wasn't a $1 transaction?
Well, you know, the thing is, though, we're at the point with the computerized system that even the little fees that they charge for other transactions are not justified anymore. Right, they're just gouging those. So that one obviously is clearly not justified. The only thing I'll say to the Bitcoin bros is, it's not a substitute for cash, because cash works under all conditions, in all weather, right? Everywhere, you know, Bitcoin has its purpose, and you know, go your hardest, but you still need electricity and internet for that to work. Cash you don't, and that's really crucial. And can I put in a final plug here for something else? Checks. Even checks, you know, they're now going to phase out checks by 2030. But when Jim Chalmers made that announcement, he based it on a lie. The banking association gave him the data and said, oh, check use has fallen from 1% of transactions to 0.1% of transactions. It's just plunged. The real story there check use hasn't fallen at all. It's actually held steady. That hold since 2007, when it was 1%, there were 2 million checks written a month. Now there's actually slightly more than 2 million checks written a month. What happened was the number of transactions has exploded, right? So the percentage went down, sure, but the number of people who need checks, often including little old people, right, in their most vulnerable years, that's what they're comfortable with. Mm. These, you know, all-powerful bankers come along and say, we're going to take away that, we're going to take away that, and it leaves these people in the lurch. And that's a better option than digital for a lot of people, right? And it shouldn't be taken away. But cash is the big one. Cash is the one that Australians need, and I think it's a red line that we can draw and say, don't cross it, and I think we can win.
It's a big challenge for all of us, but to realise that if ever there were runs on the board to provide you with the encouragement that you can actually join a bandwagon on the right side of history, this is certainly the one to join. Robbie, just quickly once again, for everyone who wants to check out the work at the party, can you provide that URL again?
Yeah, www.citizensparty.org.au. You can look us up. We also have a YouTube channel, Australian Citizens Party. On YouTube, we have a weekly show there, plus I do interviews. And every week on our show, we are updating people on the latest on this. And what I'm particularly keen that people pay attention to is this marginal seats campaign. If you live in a marginal seat, your voice is extra powerful, and we can give you hints on how to use it.
Oh, it's wonderful. Well, thank you. That is Robbie Barwick from the Australian Citizens Party doing some incredible work. Robbie, thank you for your time today.
It certainly
motivates all of us. Now, that's the end of Weekends for Me today. Coming up next, Alex will be in the hot seat to take you down a tech pathway and enlighten us all with some brand new ideas as usual. I'll be back tomorrow from midday. That is Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne time, Australian Eastern time is all lined up again, thankfully. And I'll be back with a wonderful array of brand new guests for you again tomorrow. Thanks everyone for watching and listening. Don't go anywhere. You'll be with Alex right after the break here on TNT.